Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing late on Tuesday evening. Joining me from the Barclays Center, where he's gone for two nights in a row. Last night with Warriors-Nets. That was an interesting little post-game interview you had there, Bontemps. And tonight, Kyrie Irving's return, I believe 1 year to the day since he was traded to the Mavericks from the Nets, where the Mavericks were victorious by 12 points. Tim Bontemps.
Between Kevin Durant coming back last week, Kyrie Irving coming back today, and the Warriors being here yesterday, it's been an eventful few days in Brooklyn.
Not having to worry about the old Mavericks tonight and handing it off to Bontemps and letting him deal with Kyrie Irving. It's Ben McMahon from Dallas.
Howdy, partners. Listen, anytime I can give Bontemps my work, it gets me in a good mood. You know what else gets me in a good mood? When I get a shipment with some free gear, baby. Some free gear. look at this. Look at this t-shirt. It's a good material.
Tell the audio listeners where it came from, pal.
I'm getting to it. Don't you dare interrupt me. The Brescia Bearcats men's basketball program, NAIA program in Owensboro, Kentucky. My guy, Jake Davis, the alumni director, hooked it up. Sarah Gaylor, the head coach. Listen, this is a good one. The first woman to be a men's head coach in NAIA history. Before that was in the Milwaukee Bucks basketball operations department, actually won a championship ring. Dude, not only a t-shirt, there's really nice card, handwritten notes. Listen, part of the handwritten notes, and fellas, kind of got a little verklempt when I read this, and I looked that up to make sure I was using it correctly. Coach Gaylor says, "We are honorarily banning you from our gym, the Moore Center, for basketball games." I am honorarily banned from Brescia's gym.
That's a shame,
and
because
I got a free t-shirt.
Owensboro, Kentucky would be your kind of town, I feel like.
McMahon's quest for free gear is, we don't need him getting more reason to ask for people to send him more stuff. We don't need it.
Yes, we do.
So anyway, well, I'm glad that you're all happy. I wonder if Luca will give him a handwritten note, if that's going to get him verklempt, Bontemps. Maybe Luca can bury this hatchet.
He might give him a note with his hand, but probably not a handwritten note.
Listen, if Luca gets me banned, it will not be honorarily.
Right. He's working on that. Okay. Kyrie had 36 points in this return game tonight, and it was the second night of a back-to-back. He's coming off an injury. Wasn't 100% sure he was going to play, but he did, and he played well. Luka had 35. I saw some of your tweets about what was going on there tonight, Bontemps, but I guess I have to ask what the atmosphere was when Kyrie was introduced.
There was no atmosphere. It might as well have been a regular Tuesday in November. Like, it was sort of the opposite of his entire tenure here, which was just full of insanity and noise on all sorts of levels. He kind of referred to it obliquely in his comments, saying, you know, essentially, I made some mistakes, which that is maybe the understatement of the century. But, you know, it was jarring. I mean, as someone who covered this team back when it moved to Brooklyn 12 years ago, it is jarring how much things have degraded, at least how it feels anyway, from an atmosphere standpoint here. It just doesn't feel like there's any fans really for the Nets at all at these games. Like, you come every night and the visiting team is getting massive cheers compared to the home team. And whenever Kyrie made a shot, the cheers were a lot louder than the handful of boos he was getting from the home fans. I don't think it's because there was like a massive amount of Nets fans cheering for Kyrie. I think there were a lot of Mavs fans here cheering for Kyrie and Luka. And it's just sort of what it's been like on a nightly basis of late, and it made for kind of a weird atmosphere. I mean, perhaps the funniest part was, you know, last week when Kevin was here, they did a, you know, welcome back video and a nice little tribute. Today they just do welcome back to Kyrie, to Seth Curry, who played like a year and a half here, played like 80 games, and Markieff Morris, who played 27 games here. Had them all like lumped in together. Welcome back, guys.
Hey, did Mr. Whammy have a sign?
I did not see Mr. Whammy. I'm sure he had a sign. He always does. But yeah, it was a weird night, and Kyrie was in a good mood afterward, and per usual, said a lot of stuff. Some of it
he tweeted after the game before.
He did tweet after the game.
Before,
I mean, it was all fine. I mean, you know, it was, well, there was no real drama or controversy for once.
Right. Well, so, he said, "Thank you for everything, God. I got to stay poised through the chaos and hate. the next generation is watching. Was there chaos and hate there tonight, or was he just referring to,
you know, I don't know.
Chaos and hate.
Miscellaneous, I think.
Okay.
I mean, did any sage burn?
Okay.
I mean, this was really the quote of the day. He got asked by Brian Mahoney from the AP, was there something that could have been done to have you not ask for a trade? And he said, I don't want to get too deep into it because I love protecting the people that I'm in business with, even if it doesn't work out.
He does.
Again, that's amusing when you get into what he said next. Again, I wish all those guys well, but conversations that needed to be had weren't had before the trade deadline. And I don't know if anything needed to be salvaged. I just think it was time to get my own peace of mind and go somewhere where I was able to thrive and be in a situation where I didn't have to worry about kind of behind the back talk or the media talk or not knowing how to handle real life circumstances that have nothing to do with the game of basketball. It has everything to do with how you handle someone as a person. So that would seem to be having things to say about people you were working with. I don't know. But by Kyrie standards, that is a molehill. And there wasn't really anything else that happened. And the Mavs are way better than the Nets. And if anything else, the last week is a reminder of, like, the Nets had these two guys on the team and there was all this promise of what it could be. And ultimately, they won one playoff series and it ended with a whimper. And now they've got this team that's gone 5-15 in their last 20 games and going into the trade deadline, it's kind of rudderless.
Well, and they won one playoff series and gave up all their draft capital. And
yes,
the Nets are right back in the place, not geographically, but metaphorically, where they've been for most of the franchise's history. And that is NBA irrelevancy. You know, I mean, it just is what it is.
And they're a lot more fun though.
That
was like their goal. They were so, you know, they wanted a team that was like high character and fun to watch and support and everything.
Well, unfortunately, they're not that fun to watch.
there's nothing fun about the Nets these days.
It's not. I'm not trying to be a hater or anything, but they're not a particularly fun team to watch. They're not a team that has a chance to do anything other than maybe sneak into the bottom of the play-in. You know, I mean, maybe they can scrap and become an 8 seed. And there's no benefit to being bad unless you're with the Houston Rockets. And then you're loving the way things are working out in Brooklyn. And every franchise would have done the same thing they did if they had a chance to sign KD and Kyrie. You do that 100 times out of 100. It just ended up going about as poorly as it could. And Kyrie needed to get out of there. It was chaos. It was much of it self-inflicted. You know, I think we've talked a lot about Kyrie so far in Dallas. Very mixed results on the floor. You know, it's almost a full year now. The Mavericks are sub-500 over the course of that year. Now 5 games above 500 this year. Luka and Kyrie have only played 40 games together. Now they went 5-11
with Kyrie.
5-11 together last year. 14-10 now this year. I was surprised Luka played 40 some odd minutes tonight. Given that Kyrie was back, I saw Luka said that it's not nearly as taxing when you have Kyrie with him, but still. And then, you know, like I said in the group chat, Kyrie, since he's been in Dallas, I think the citizenship has been outstanding. Bontemps, you kind of scoffed at that, but like, dude, he's been a good dude. He's been a good
by comparison to what was going on in Brooklyn, I think that's fair.
Yeah, like he's been great in the community. Honestly, just from my own personal perspective, he's been very pleasant to deal with. His teammates love him, so on and so forth. And then his attendance has been not great. You know, he gets hurt a lot. And when he gets hurt, it takes a while to come back. And then, you know, but there's been no kind of controversy. And
that's certainly true.
You know, Kyrie, like tonight, there are times when interviewing Kyrie is kind of like defending him. You better really be locked in if you want to stay in front of him. And then sometimes you think you know where he's going, and you still get lost 3 or 4 times and kind of look around like, I don't know what the hell just happened. You know, so sometimes he'll go back and forth and side to side and threw the legs on you and just leave you kind of really clueless. And he had a few tangents like that tonight. That's okay.
Yeah. Well, even those are more rare these days than they were in Brooklyn.
They're at least harmless. They're harmless.
But, you know, a year in, has it really made any impact in Dallas?
No, it hasn't.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, obviously they hope the best is yet to come. The Mavericks, it's not just Kyrie, not just Luka, but like Lively's gotten banged up a lot. He just had nose surgery. Hopefully he'll be back soon. Sounds like not before the not before the end of this road trip, certainly. And we'll see about before the All-Star break. I actually had that same surgery my senior year in high school when I was slap boxing somebody, ended up taking a right hook to the schnauzer, and it ended up on the wrong, like under my right eye. I got out of like 3 weeks of
track practice.
But I was not exactly.
I don't know if it's quite called a schnauzer, but
why?
That's a dog.
That's a dog.
Whatever, man.
A schnoz.
That thing. This thing right in the middle of my face.
First off, we're gonna have to roll it back a second. He's podcast gold. Okay, that's number one.
Sometimes.
Number two, slap boxing.
Well, now, it was like fake fighting. So I've actually broken my nose 3 times. First time, bus stop in first grade, I smarted off to my older brother, and it was cold, so I had like the hands inside the jacket. From behind, he did the foot in front of my legs, push in the back. I got my hands in the jacket. I went right down face first on the ground.
That's like right out of a Christmas Story.
Hey, I'm going to tell you right now, though, I played my Pee Wee football game that weekend.
Of course you did. Yeah. You're a Texan.
And then senior year of high school, you know, it was kind of like play, maybe more shadow boxing than slap boxing. But old Jose, I believe the last name was Pena, if I can recall correctly. He caught me with a right hook.
What happened to the dog?
And then, so I got that.
The dog got hit in the story, right, Bontemps? The dog got hit.
He got hit right in the schnauzer. Yeah, the dog got beaten.
Oh, my God.
ASPCA. So I got it straightened back out. Was able to skip like 3 weeks of track practice, which the only thing worse than track is field. So I was actually ecstatic about that. Trust me, I know when.
What did you do? Shot put?
No, I weighed like a buck 85. No, I didn't do no damn shot put. The 400 and high jump and a bunch of other crap I hated. And then freshman year of college,
did you ever have any trouble going over those hurdles?
Oh, dude, they tried to get me to 300 hurdles, and I was like, you know, my leg doesn't do that like flip out thing. And so I was like Super Mario Brother and over there. And I did it once. And they were like, no, the same. I was like, I tried telling you. Like, you're the one who told me to do it. I tried telling you.
We got to get off high school track stories. We got to get back to work.
I broke it again my freshman year.
It's 12:11. It's 12 a.m. It's 12:11 a.m. We got to move past track.
Agree with you. I agree with you, but I have no idea what this guy's going to say. So I mean,
I don't either, but this has turned into a Kyrie Babel
anyway,
situation.
Derek Lively, Derek Lively busted up his nose.
Work.
And had surgery. But he doesn't have track practice.
Or a schnauzer that I know of.
Well, look, here's the thing with the Mavs. Mavs are 28-23 after this win. They're only 4 games ahead of the Warriors in 11th. I'm not saying they're going to end up in 11th again, but like for everything that's gone on, you can look at it and say, well, Kyrie and Luka have played a combined 24 games together, 24. And they're five games over 500, and they're in 7th, so there's upward mobility. You could also say they're one Luka extended absence away from being maybe in the same spot they were in last year. So for a team that, as we talked about going back to last summer after the disaster that was the end of last season, how big this year was and where they finished and the momentum they had going one way or the other, heading into some pretty critical times as far as trying to convince Luka this is a place to be long-term. It's a pretty interesting couple of months left to see how this season winds
well,
up.
Well, look, they are trying to do something here at the deadline. They have been, as far as I am told, reasonably active in talks, trying to get basically talent. I've heard several different concepts of constructions, and I'm not going to go into names because I don't want aggregation up the yang here. I get it enough already. The names that I'm hearing are not going to change the balance of power in the Western Conference, but they're definitely trying to bring some more talent in. You know, the challenge is that they're already kind of expensive. I'm not sure how the new owners are spending. And they've got one first round pick and two second round picks. Like, I'm already hearing there's going to be some guys get traded this week, I think, for 4 and 5 second round picks like we saw last year.
Yeah, it's certainly become the norm in recent years.
Yeah, and like, you know, there's 5 teams that have double digit. We always talk about first round draft picks and how that's gotten sideways. There's five teams that have double digit second round picks.
The Thunder have 20 something.
The Thunder have 21. The Knicks have 11. The Magic have 12. The Spurs have 16. And the Wizards have 15. And that, in fact, that's one of the things, one of the players that I think could go for like a bunch of second round picks if he gets traded is Tyus Jones, because the Wizards have been trying to get a first round pick for him. And I don't think have gotten it. Otherwise, I think he would have been traded. So the Wizards have 15 second round picks, and they might get like another basketful if they move Tyus Jones. So my point is, though, the Mavericks have two. So, you know, if they're trying to get a player, they can't even do the here's 5 second round picks move. You know, they're just very limited. And if
they're light on draft capital and they're light on, attractive trade assets in terms of players on their roster, obviously Luka's not getting traded. Kyrie's not getting traded. You can forget about Derek Lively. And then it gets pretty dicey after that. You know, there is interest in Josh Green, but he's up and down. And then he signed the extension. So there's the poison pill complications and all that. Jaden Hardy's a guy who hasn't had a great sophomore year. His trade value is taking a dip. You know, maybe there's some teams who like Olivier Maxence Prosper, but that's
he's not playing. So
yeah, it's based on pre-draft evaluation. It's not based on anything you've seen this season. So listen, they are being aggressive. They definitely want to upgrade. I expect them to do something. I don't know how much they can really move the needle given the circumstances.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Okay, Bontemps, before we move on to some other stuff, I do want to ask you about Monday night when the Warriors were there. The Warriors, I think, won by about 10, but that wasn't the takeaway. Also, the Warriors won where only one player made a three-pointer. Steph made 4. That was it for the Warriors. And it was the first time a team had won when only one player made 3s since 2017. It's happened a few times since then, but where the team actually won. Now, the Warriors are still a high three-point shooting volume team. I think they came into tonight 4th in the league in average makes per game. But none of that was the focus. The focus was the interview that you did with Anthony Slater of The Athletic with Klay Thompson, which was very raw. The footage was everywhere today. And I wondered if you could take us through that a little bit.
Yeah, it was pretty jarring because I, you know, as everybody who's listening probably knows, I'd spent a couple of years living in the Bay, being around that team every day.
Do you think they know Kevin that, Durant. McMahon? Do you think they know Bontemps' history?
I would imagine if people are listening to the pod for this long, they would at least have some idea.
If they knew, they forgot because no one gives a crap.
Well, he grew up on a dairy farm, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Yeah, that's great. Let's just go back to recounting McMahon's track and field highlights. The point is, we have all spent a lot of time around the world.
You know, Bontemps ran cross country in high school.
I did. McMahon? I was good at it.
He still runs, which, God, I mean, running voluntarily? Are you kidding me?
All right. Sorry, Clay Thompson. I was my fault. Fine. I'm sorry.
It's all good. Let's have this pod go until 2:30 in the morning. It'll be fine. We've all spent a lot of time around this Warriors team, and all of us really have seen them sort of from beginning to end, life cycle wise. And we don't really get a chance to see that anymore in the league without, I mean, we're just talking about Kyrie Irving, right? Like these stars, especially, are just transient players a lot of times in the league. LeBron James has changed teams several times. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, you know, go down the list. A lot of these guys have changed teams over and over again. These Warriors guys have all been together for years. And you watch now, and Monday night, like you mentioned, Klay Thompson for the second time in three games is not closing the game. That's notable. It's also notable because he's not closing the game in favor of Gui Santos, who is a 55th overall pick in the 2022 draft, who the Warriors signed this year in large part to keep their luxury tax bill down as a second round pick. His salary's a lot lower. He'd played 61 total minutes in the NBA this year over eight games before Monday night. And then he's playing the final 6 minutes of the game in a 5-point game, and Klay Thompson's watching from the bench. And after the game, as people probably saw in the video, Klay, to his credit, answered every question, but was clearly having a really hard time.
Yeah.
And it was pretty hard to do, frankly, like, because you weren't sure if he was going to actually get emotional talking about.
You know, he just got out of the shower, so I don't know, but his eyes were red.
Yeah,
you know,
it was.
I'm not saying he was about to cry, but it wasn't. If he had cried, it wasn't far away.
He was trying to come up with the right words to say. And I think he deserves credit for how he handled it, because he was like, for people who haven't really been around Klay, he always sounds kind of short. So it might have sounded like he was mad, but I think he was genuinely happy for the younger players on the team. Like, he talked about how proud he was of a guy like Gui Santos, who's been playing in the G League, comes up and helps them win a game. But like he said, you're talking about a guy who was one of the best players in the league, who I think it's sort of been lost because he's come back and played pretty well, missed two entire seasons with an Achilles tear and then an ACL tear and then an Achilles tear, has bounced back from that back-to-back 20-point seasons, which is very impressive. And even this year, he's averaging 17 points a game and shooting 38% from three. It's not like he's unplayable.
No, if he was like on a different team and he was being made available at the trade deadline, people would be like, oh, he's worth two first round picks.
Right.
Or I mean, something like that.
He's still a good player who can help teams win games, but he's not the player he was. And on this Warriors team that has had truly a crazy season on every level, on and off the court, dealing with tragedy off the court, having all these crazy games, good and bad, mostly bad on the court, a big storyline of the season has been Klay not finishing games, or whether he finishing games or not, whether, you know, sometimes Steve Kerr's getting criticized from having him out there. Other times there's questions about whether he should be. And it seemed like a pretty clear line of demarcation on Monday with him not playing. Steve Kerr pretty frankly talking about it's hard as players get older to manage things. Klay addressing it in the locker room. Draymond in sort of the most classic Draymond fashion, inserting himself into the story in a completely ridiculous way and frankly making an awkward situation more so. Steph trying to, in like also sort of typical Steph fashion, try to as delicately handle a pretty difficult situation as possible. But like, Klay Thompson's going to be a free agent this offseason. Those negotiations are going to be, I think, awfully interesting, because he is still a decent player, but he's clearly not the player he was. And he's certainly not a guy who's worth a max contract, which he's on now. And for a Warriors team that's had, like I said before, just so much stuff happen over the last decade, it was just a fascinating day to be around them. And we'll see what happens over the next couple months. But what seems clear is you've got Steph Curry, who's still really, really good. You've got Brandon Podziemski and Jonathan Kuminga as young players who are ascendant. You've got Draymond Green, who still is seen as a pretty integral piece there. And then you've got Andrew Wiggins and Klay Thompson, who were key parts of the title team a year and a half ago, that have had vacillating roles there. And as of now, it looks like Klay's in particular is receding.
Well, and I would even put Kevon Looney in that group too.
Receded completely at this point.
But look, Klay's the one who people really care about because he's a Hall of Fame player. He was a star. I mean, I don't know, superstar might be a bit much, but I mean, we're talking about one of the best shooters of all time who has, as he's reminded people, four rings and was a huge part of those four rings. You know, some
and has one of the most important games this entire run.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. At game six in 2016, which game as someone six, who was courtside for that game in Oklahoma City, I can tell you, I will never forget being in the locker room on Monday. And I will never forget being at that game in the big man can say whatever he wants. I will never forget being at that game in Oklahoma City and the way Clay turned that game around when the Warriors were dead and their 73-win season was going to end in Oklahoma City and Kevin Durant was going to the finals and Clay Thompson made sure it didn't.
I was top of the lower bowl, but I'll never forget it either.
You were there barely doing any work.
He was
waiting for Big Rich.
Yeah. I was head of the Pink Parrot post game.
I thought that was one of the most raw post game interviews I'd seen since I've been covering the league. I said that on NBA Today today, and Austin Rivers and Richard Jefferson like freaked out. They were like 20 years. I was like, I didn't say it was the most, but one of the most just raw because he's dealing with his emotions in real time that everybody's seeing. And we all know him so well. And like you said, Bontemps, because these guys have been together so long, we've all seen.
And it's such a blow to the pride of a guy who for most of his career, he's one of the best players in the league. He's one of the best shooters in league history. He's one of the great champions that's ever come through. And obviously the injuries are part of this, but at 33, he probably feels, especially when you see the 35-year-old guy who he's been sharing a backcourt with basically his whole career, he probably feels like, hey, he should still be in the tail end of his prime. Right. And he's not washed up.
So let's,
but,
you know,
like he's a solid NBA player who, whether he's going to close a game or not at this point, is a night by night, case by case basis. And that is so far from he's accustomed to being.
I get it. Here's the other thing, though. If Steve Kerr, whether he's right or wrong, feels that Guy Santos is a better choice to finish a game, he's got to do it because he's got to do whatever he can to win every game he's got.
Just to get in the play-in.
So, yes, that's what I'm saying. So, like, look, if that's
especially the way their season's gone when they've lost every possible close game imaginable, including the game before in Atlanta when they had another 8 or 9 point lead with a minute and a half to go, blew the game and lost it in overtime when Steph had 60.
Right. Yeah.
And I didn't sense any hint of Klay Thompson pouting, but that doesn't mean it's an easy pill to swallow. What I got was a guy who is really struggling with the reality that he's not the guy he used to be. And those days are gone and, kind of recalibrating his own expectations, I think. And like, it's also like the fact he's going into free agency this summer, is he back in Golden State? That's how could that not be on his mind? I mean, the financial stuff, like he's not going to get close to max. And if he leaves, he's not going to get close to max. It'll be closer to mid-level than max.
Well, look, I don't have any idea what the world's going to look like in July. The question will be is, would Clay leave the Warriors in a money decision?
Yeah.
In other words, like, obviously there's a certain number, but like, if the offers were all equal or if it was just a little bit more, would he leave? Because we've seen... Right. We've seen some guys stay with the Warriors for less money. So that's the question.
Yeah, guys might be gone by the trade deadline.
Well, that's true. We'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. Speaking of the West standings, we had a change at the top of the West on Tuesday night. Clippers eked ahead of the Thunder. The Thunder lost.
And the Wolves.
The Wolves and the Thunder both lost. The Jazz beat the Thunder in Salt Lake.
Back of a back-to-back wins for Will Hardy and the Jazz, by the way. Beat the Bucks Sunday with a ridiculous comeback in the fourth quarter and then win the fourth quarter against the Thunder tonight. It's a pretty damn good couple wins.
The Jazz, who the Warriors are chasing to try to get into the play-in. But yeah, it's essentially a four-way tie for first in the West, but because the Clippers have played a couple fewer games, they are percentage points ahead. Like, if games behind, they're all even.
Clippers 34 and 15, And then Thunder, Wolves, and the Nuggets are all 35-16.
I think the Clippers were about three and six or three and seven start the season, something like that.
Yeah, I think that they lose like the first five after the Harden trade.
Yes.
And I remember Ty Lue, their third game after the Harden trade, they got smoked in Dallas. And Ty Lue after that game, if it's not a direct quote, it's really close. He said, "You teams better get us now." And yeah. He was basically saying, yep, like, we're going to be really, really good. I'm just telling you, you better get us now while we're figuring stuff out. And he's been absolutely right. You know, one of the things they figured out was Russ has got to come off the bench, or, you know, Russ figured that out. But since they made that move, like, Harden has been exactly what they wanted. Kawhi Leonard's playing at a first team All-NBA type of level. Some people are trying to put him in the MVP discussion. I'm not quite ready for that, but Paul George has been phenomenal. The pieces fit. Ty Lue is a proven championship coach. And look, if you're going to look into a crystal ball, obviously you can't predict injuries, but I think it's very likely that the Clippers and Nuggets, in, you know, one order or the other, are going to be 1-2 coming out of the West. I think they're clearly the two best teams in the Western Conference. That's no disrespect to the Thunder, who are going to be good for a long, long time. That's no disrespect to the Timberwolves, who, you know, the Timberwolves, just their struggles closing games and protecting big leads keep on biting them.
It happened again on Tuesday. I don't know how big the lead that the Bulls overcame. It was double digits.
It was 23 in the third quarter.
I didn't know it was that much.
Yep.
They've pretty had large. I think they've blown four double digit leads in the fourth quarter in the last like 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks.
BPI, by the way, has the season ending with the Clippers in first, the Thunder in second, the Wolves in third, and the Denver Nuggets in fourth.
Well, that's the way it is right now. That's great BPI work there by BPI.
Well, 71% chance of the Clippers having the number one seed.
Well, I don't know. I watched the Denver Nuggets roll to a championship last year, so you can give me nerdy numbers. I'm going to trust my eyeballs on that one.
That's not winning the West. That was seeds. Seeds.
I think the Nuggets are going to do pretty well down the stretch season.
I'm not arguing with you on that. But look, when you also talk about no disrespect to the Thunder and the Wolves, I mean, at the end of the day, we've seen Kawhi Leonard win two finals MVPs. Mm-hmm. And like we talked about, I think we talked about it the other day with regard to the Celtics game, where I talked about it, I think, on the Monday pod with Ohm. When Kawhi Leonard's going up against Jason Tatum or just about anybody else outside of maybe Nikola Jokic, you're taking Kawhi Leonard in who's the best player if he's healthy just about every time. When you got that guy on your team, you've got a puncher's chance at minimum. And that's before you start looking at the rest of the Clippers.
You're taking him over KD?
I mean, that's one where I think it depends on maybe the day or how they're playing. But I think if you ask me, peak Kawhi, peak KD in the playoffs, might take Kawhi. I'd have to think about that one.
Are you taking him over Luka right now?
I think I would in the playoffs, yeah. Because Kawhi's doing it at both ends and Luka's not.
Yeah, that I have such high respect for KD, but Kawhi's top end is pretty high. I'm not.
No, we haven't seen it. He hasn't got through the playoffs healthy, literally, in 4 years. So since they lost in the bubble. So, like, let's see if he can get to the end healthy. But if healthy, he's right there with anybody. And that's before you look at Paul George, before you look at the way Harden's fit in. You mentioned Russell Westbrook. We've given him a lot of grief on this pod, deservedly so. He's bought into this bench role, played really well. They've got depth across the board. They could maybe add another piece this week. We'll see what they end up doing. Like, there.
Hey, just wait until the Russ for Sixth Man of the Year hype gets rolling. You know it's coming.
Well, listen, it won't be deserved this year, but it'll be a lot more deserved than it was last year.
Has there ever been a guy who won MVP and won Sixth Man of the Year?
Do I look like Stats Williams to you?
I mean, Bill Walton, I remember off the top of my head.
Boom, in your face. The whiz of the quiz knows.
Did Brian stay freeze, or is he just frozen?
I was trying to think. That's a good one. That's good.
I mean, Bill Walton definitely won both. So
he did.
There's at least one. I don't know if anybody else did.
Okay.
Harden Jackson chimes in.
Oh.
In the other order, but yes.
Harden. In the other order. Harden, Bill Walton in the order you're thinking of, but yes, right. That's right. James Harden too. Good job, right. Jackson.
This is from Stats Williams on Kawhi Leonard over the last 30 games. 30 is a big number. That's
a lot of games.
That's big sample size theater right there. And the Clippers are 25-5 in those games. This is his last 30 games, not the Clippers' last 30, because he did miss some with the hip injury. 26 points a game, 57% from the field. And he's taken a lot of jumpers. Yeah. Okay, he's, 51% from three. Holy Moses. 92 at the line. So 50, 50, 90. Almost 60, 50, 90.
I tell you what, man, he is also springy. Like, he is finishing above the rim, through contact. Like, he is
looks great. Back
looking athletic as hell.
Yeah, let's take you some more into the shooting numbers, because Stats Williams did a lot of work on this. All right, 75% from inside 5 feet, okay? That's fifth best in the league. 54% from 5 to 9 feet, sixth best. 53% from 10 to 14 feet, 10th best. 46% from 15 to 19, 10th best, which I actually thought he'd be better than that because that's his bread and butter. 49% from 20 to 24 feet, seventh. 52% from 25 to 29 feet, best in the league amongst people with at least 50 attempts. So 50 attempts, it's not like he shot four of them out there and made
two.
So
when you look at his shot chart, it's all just neon green.
Right. Neon green across the board.
And then Stats Williams was doing this thing where he was showing us using the second spectrum data, like how Kawhi is doing this with like the flattest shot in the league.
It's like a dart.
That's always been the case.
Yeah, I know. So what it means is, you got to have really good lift for it to go in, right? Because he can't make up for poor lift. His average arc is about the same as Sadiq Bey's, who shoots 29% on jumpers.
I was going to say, arc, similar percentage, not.
And so basically, Sadiq Bey's throwing line drives in there and making 29%, which ranks last in the league for guys who have 150 jumpers. Kawhi's goes in 51% of the time, which is first in the league. So, like, he is having a historically, not, and I got the voodoo right on him. He'll go 2 of 17 tomorrow night or something. Games on ESPN, I think. Anyway, he's playing great. But you certainly, if you try to project this out, the Timberwolves and the Thunder, who have very, very little playoff experience on their roster, they need the higher seeds more than the Clippers and Nuggets. If the Nuggets end up with the 4 seed, it'll be a minor inconvenience. You're either going to play well or not.
The one thing I push back on is home court. When your home court is mile high, 5,280 feet high with the video, but the altitude, like, they lost one playoff game at home last year. Like, yeah, that is,
that's true. But to Brian's point, if Denver is in a series with Minnesota or Oklahoma City where they don't have home court, they're not going to be bothered. They might not, maybe they ultimately won't win the series, but they're not going to go into it thinking, oh man, we're going to be in trouble because we don't have home court in the series.
Maybe they get beat, but it's more important for Minnesota.
Yeah.
For younger teams, it's obviously a huge advantage to have those games at home. And look, for as great, like, we've talked a ton about Shea and Ant, and as great as those guys are and as bright a futures as those guys have, look, Shea's got a chance to maybe win MVP as soon as this year, right? The way he's playing and the way the Thunder are playing. But Nikola Jokic has gone on to win Finals MVP. Kawhi's done it twice. Like, let's see those guys do it in the – I think we need to see them have playoff runs and do it in the playoffs and win series in the playoffs before we're going to put them ahead of Denver and the Clippers based off of the history that those elite players on those teams have.
Yeah, so – four-way dead heat, basically, in the West, 50 games into the season. So that's certainly fascinating.
And by the way, we got a three-way dead heat for second in the East.
Right. Well, the Bucks,
after the Bucks lost again today.
Yeah, the Bucks just lost a few minutes ago to the Suns. The Bucks and the Knicks are both two games back in the loss column to the Cavs right now, who are in second.
Listen, Doc Rivers' second win as the Bucks head coach might not be until the All-Star game.
Half game back in the standings of the Cavs.
Right.
Not quite a dead heat, to your point, but they're all bunched right up in the standings.
Yeah. By the way, we had some injuries in the NBA on Tuesday night, and this is going to – we'll have to see how this all works out. Jalen Brunson rolled his ankle pretty good. I don't think it's like, you know
– I just checked serious. With Ian Begley, who was at the game, our former colleague. He tweeted he walked out without a limp, no boot or anything.
Okay.
Dante DiVincenzo declared that Jalen Brunson was good, said he told him he was good when he asked him, so everything was fine. So we will see what happened.
He rolled it pretty good. It would not surprise me if it was a little bit.
Oh yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying what was reported.
That calls to mind one of my favorite quotes about LeBron, which was during a playoff series, I think early in his career, where he rolled his ankle similarly in a playoff series in the key game, and LeBron wasn't available to the media, so we asked his teammates, and it was Larry Hughes, and said, "Larry, what do you think of this? LeBron rolling his ankle? Do you think he'll be okay?" And he goes, "Have you seen his ankles?" And he like put his hand up and indicate like the size of a bicep. And LeBron did play the next game. So hopefully Brunson's okay. Also, Chris Middleton, the Bucks just can't the Bucks are in some struggleville right now. At least they didn't let Suns put up 140 tonight.
They didn't have Brooke Lopez, who's missed the last few games for personal reasons. They didn't have Damian Lillard. I believe that was an ankle for him.
Sprained ankle, yeah.
And then Middleton left that game early.
With an ankle sprain in the first quarter. Not ideal, but not an ideal stretch. Now 1-4 with Doc Rivers at the helm.
Right. So hopefully these injuries aren't serious.
But just reinforces that, Milwaukee, John Horst has been ultra aggressive every year at the trade deadline. They don't have a ton of assets. They got Portland second, I believe, this year, which is a pretty interesting second. They don't have a lot of salaries they can move, really, but whatever they can come up with, I'm sure Milwaukee will do, because John has always been super aggressive at the deadline, adding pieces, and I suspect they'll find some way to add something between now and Thursday. We'll just see what it is.
But he's trying to turn three packs of ramen noodles into a meal.
Sounds like you during the pandemic.
I'm not, to be clear, I'm not saying they're going to wind up with some star. I just suspect they're going to find a way to come up with something, but we're also looking at a trade market where you got a lot of teams trying to come up with something. And it just, as of this moment, we'll see if it changes, but with 36 hours or so till the trade deadline, there's not a lot of optimism. There's going to be a lot of excitement.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Yeah, and so we'll talk about the trade deadline right now, and it just tells you we're this far into the pod before we're really talking a lot about trades, which is an indication our feel talking to folks in the league is that it ain't buzzing with activity. Now, we're going to see deals. We're going to see a number of players get moved around. Whether or not it's going to really change the balance of power, I don't know. Now, Milwaukee is definitely trying. I was talking to a team just last night where who's been talking with Milwaukee, and they were like, they must have dozens of trade scenarios that they've been pitching, trying three-way deals, trying all kinds of stuff to get anybody in there who can defend a little bit, particularly on the perimeter. They have 2 second-round picks that they're allowed to trade, no firsts. One of them is Portland's pick this year.
They can try to repackage some swaps like Phoenix did too, if they want to really try to get creative to try to manufacture something too. But that's, you know, you're really scraping the bottom of the barrel if you're swapping already swap picks.
Yeah, that's right. Well, and you are correct, Bontemps. John Horst has done a deal in four of the last five deadlines. So, you know, we didn't really think they had much that they could do last year, and he came up with Jay Crowder.
Yeah, Crowder. They traded traded 5 seconds for Crowder, traded 4 seconds for Nico Mirotic. Like they've consistently gone out and gotten players
right
at the deadline. And I'm sure he'll be, like you said, their history indicates they're going to try everything they can to do something. And you don't need to be a rocket scientist to look at their team and say they need to find some people who can guard people, and we'll see if they can.
So what we're watching in the league right now, Brooklyn has been involved in a lot of different conversations. And they've been in conversations where they're selling pieces, and there's been in conversations where they're buying pieces. Spencer Dinwiddie is the most available piece there. If they're buying, they maybe attach something to him and bring it in. If they're selling, the question is, do they sell Royce O'Neal and or Dorian Finney-Smith? Mm-hmm. Their asking price for both, I think, has been pretty high. But those are some role players that could be interesting. They're 10 games under 500 now. So
5-15 since the infamous tank game against Milwaukee, which Jacques Vaughn tried to like say, oh, you know, people have criticized us for sitting guys in the past with regard to all the guys they have out injured right now. But I mean, you can say whatever you want. They were 500 going into that game, and their season's been an abject disaster since. So
I mean, I don't know if it's cause and effect, because let's be honest, like it's not a good roster.
I would say it's 100% cause and effect, because they were a decent team that was literally sitting at 500. And from that moment on, they've been a disaster.
Bontemps has been annoyed with that since the moment it happened.
Well, I'll just look at their games. I mean, they've been terrible since then.
I know.
I want to say something about causation and correlation, but I'm not sure I know what either one of those words means.
But I think you pronounced them right. Yeah, that's good.
Yes.
That's good. I think they went over
that. You're making real strides from a vocabulary standpoint.
Yeah, I think they went over that in your third sophomore year of college. And I say that with love, my guy. I say that with love.
Listen, I'm 8 years in college. I'm twice as smart as either of you guys, clearly.
I'm not in position to... listen, I'm not messing with you. You can hit me right in the schnauzer.
You're the one getting all the free swag, pal. You're doing something right. well done, Brandon.
I am definitely not shadow or slap boxing with anybody, much less McMahon. He's got the reach... You know, McMahon believes that no boxer under 6 foot has any chance. No slap boxer. Philly.
Right.
Probably the most interesting thing that's happened this week so far is that Joel Embiid had a surgery that did not rule him out for the season. Now, I think there's some nuance in here. Had they gone in to that surgery on Tuesday and
procedure, they have not called it a surgery. Okay. They're being as vague as
I didn't.
Possible.
I you know. He tore his meniscus and he needed surgery, okay? Coming out of that event that happened in an operating room, if they had had to repair it, I think they would have said he's out for the season. So the fact that it is reevaluated in 4 weeks indicates that it was a meniscusectomy, which means they removed some of the meniscus, which means that it typically enables you to come back in the 4 to 8 week range. Now, they may get to 4 weeks and decide with where their team is and decide with where his recovery is that they're not going to do it. So I don't want to make it sound like I have any idea. I don't think they know either, but they are now operating in talks like he's going to come back and hopefully before the playoffs. So I would expect Philly to make 1 to 3 trades before Thursday afternoon. And I would also expect them to try. I'm not saying they're going to accomplish this. I would expect them to try to acquire players that either have expiring contracts or that have next year's salaries that are not fully guaranteed or that could easily be offloaded. I think they want to hedge their bets, not just with Embiid's injury, but hedge their bets on what happens with this season so that if they need to go back and open up the $50 million in cap room that they're currently kind of holding, they can't. So it would not surprise me. So, you know, they have a whole bunch of guys with expiring contracts. The most likely guys to go are Marcus Morris, Robert Covington, Furkan Korkmaz, maybe Daniel House if you get down the list. And I expect them to try to get guys back who are on. So you're talking about targeting a guy like Bruce Brown, team option. Targeting a guy like Bojan Bogdanovic, team option. they're going to try to get maybe a backup center who can sort of play center minutes. So you're talking about potentially a guy like Kelly Olynyk, who's in the last year of his deal. Andre Drummond, who's in the last year of his deal. They have three tradable firsts. And ooh, I think
Andre Drummond had a big-time showcase game against the Wolves. Showcase game.
He had double-double.
He's played really, really well this season.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Philly has a
couple of two smalls on Gobert.
Mock Gobert at your own risk, man. That's what I say.
I don't mock him.
Not
Andre
you.
Andre Drummond did.
Not you, sir. Not you. Yes. I know. Philly has three tradable firsts, six tradable seconds. So we'll see if they have to attach anything to any of that. I do also, if I'm looking at another team that I really expect to do something, I think Washington. I don't think, based on my conversations, that it's going to be Kyle Kuzma. He's probably the most interesting player. I think it's more likely Tyus Jones. There's been a number of teams that are interested in him. We mentioned earlier. Denny Avdija. I can't pronounce his last name.
Avdija.
Has been in some talks, but I'd kind of be surprised if they moved him. They signed him to an extension before the year, but he has been dangled out there. Daniel Gafford is another center who could be a starter or be a high-level backup. I think Orlando has been active, looking to try to bolster their guard ranks. And so I think, you know, they're a team that I think is potentially going to be reasonably aggressive. The Clippers are shopping and trying to find a way to get somebody to be interested in taking PJ Tucker, who's out of their rotation. He has $11 million player option for next year that I think is highly likely that he picks up, and that limits his trade market. And he would like to get traded. So I think
he told Ohm he is actively trying to get traded.
Yes, he did.
So anyway, if that team's really good and they're able to, now they have four tradable seconds and one tradable first. I would be very surprised if they traded that first, but I guess it's possible. But you know, they are a team that, you know, if they can add a nice, another little role player, I've heard some of the players that they've been targeting. I don't know if they're going to get it done, but you know, it would potentially be a nice addition for them. Golden State, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't think that they're going to trade Chris Paul. For various reasons. The real question is, would they trade Wiggins? And if they have a Wiggins trade, is it a deal that actually can make them better? They would be probably selling pretty low on Wiggins if they traded him right now. And the one player that I think it's super interesting to talk about, the player especially, is Miles Bridges. But a 41-point game, talk about a showcase game, 41-point game against the Lakers and a loss on Monday for the Hornets. It looks like there's a good chance that the Hornets are going to move Miles Bridges. I don't know for sure, but there's a lot of different interest in him. And Bridges, as we talked about before, has a veto power. It's not a no trade clause. It's more of a veto that he can enforce. And the reason he's got that is that he's on a qualifying offer. So he's on a 1-year contract. If he gets traded, he loses his bird rights and the team that acquires him cannot sign him for more than the average player salary next year. And it doesn't behoove him to, you gotta be real careful giving up his bird rights. So he will be presented with options and he will get to pick one if it comes to that. And, you know, he's a guy who, because he's on a qualifying offer, doesn't make that much money. And it's kind of a way to acquire a player who is probably underpaid for his production. And it's kind of like doing free agency before free agency. He obviously has off-court challenges and off-court issues, and that is a factor. And
the whole reason he's on a qualifying offer.
And probably part of the reason why the Hornets are seriously considering letting him walk.
And I would not want to be in the Miles Bridges business. I'll just put it that way.
He's a very talented player, but honestly, the fact that he's playing this year, given the accusations that happened this fall, pretty alarming. I somebody will take a chance on him, and I would side with Bontemps on that. I wouldn't want it to be my team.
One more. I would also keep an eye on New York. 8 tradable firsts, 11 tradable seconds. I think they're going to be careful with giving up any of those firsts, but they have some expiring salary, and they could use some size right now.
Forget size. They need bodies. They have Josh Hart hurt his knee today. It's unclear. I mean, again, he left without a limp or crutches or anything, but he was dealing with a knee injury. Jalen Brunson hurt his ankle. They're down Mitchell Robinson. OG Anunoby hasn't played in six games, I think, now with this elbow issue. Julius Randle's out for a while. Quentin Grimes, who's wanted to be traded, has got a knee sprain. Not sure when he's going to play. So they're down several rotation players.
Yeah, Mitchell Robinson, you didn't even mention him. He's been out for a while.
Right. There was one positive update, as Tom Thibodeau said, after the trade deadline, or not after the trade deadline, after the All-Star break, he's supposed to be back on the court again. So perhaps he will be back sometime in March. I mean, that's not me. That's me speculating based off what Tib said, but there's at least a chance he'll be back in the relatively near future, but certainly not in the next month. So with Evan Fournier on a potential expiring contract, like we've talked about a bunch of times on the pod, with that team option for next year, and with depending on what they do with Grimes, like they have the ability to go add at least one player to play in their rotation. With all the injuries they have, I'll be stunned if they don't add somebody in the next 36 hours to give them some more bodies, because they're down a whole bunch of people at the moment.
You guys have any other commentary on that sort of not exciting list of stuff that I've just detailed?
I would just reemphasize sort of how you laid it out, which is that there's just, you know, we'll see. You always have to sort of qualify these things, right? Because like, we didn't know Kevin Durant was going to be traded at this stage, literally, of last year. But with 36 hours to go, you look back at the way the season's played out, with Dame being traded, then Jrue Holiday, and then James Harden, and then OG Anunoby, and then Pascal Siakam. If you said this week those five guys got traded, you'd be like, holy cow, this is the biggest trade deadline ever, right? But instead, because that happened over the course of the season, it's sort of a slow, moving, steady trickle of trades. We now gotten to the point where, especially if DeJounte Murray doesn't get traded this week, probably not anybody of real consequence, you know, high-level, all-star caliber players getting moved. And like you said, there'll be trades. There's always trades. But they're probably going to be more fill-in-gap type kind of guys, as opposed to, you know, breaking news, you know, X name big player is traded for something to a contender.
Yeah, and I think the Lakers-Hawks talks have been, you know, I don't have it up to the up-to-second thing, but I think they've been pretty cold. Does not mean they cannot restart quickly, but I don't think that was something that was, at least as of the last 24, 48 hours, that I heard much about. So we'll see what happens there.
LeBron says he's good with the guys that are there. These are the guys that are there, so there's nothing more to talk about.
Yeah, LeBron said a lot of words, but he didn't say yes. He never said the word yes.
LeBron didn't say
very good. Did he say they were good with the guys that were there, or did he just say, these are the guys that are here? Yeah. I thought it was just, these are the guys
that are here. These are the guys that are here, so there's nothing more to talk about.
Yes.
It reminded me,
an endorsement.
It reminded me of a quote when, you know, he and David Blatt were cross with each other, and he was asked about whether, you know, David Blatt was the right coach, and he goes, he's the coach that we have.
And he's with the same level of enthusiasm as he said about the players on his team.
Yes.
Yeah. I also like when LeBron's asked about the trade deadline stuff. Oh, he did say, he said, it's not a question for me. Yes, it is, LeBron. And he said, I love who we have in the locker room, and that's all I worry about.
Yeah.
So, you know,
enjoy LeBron. We're going to miss him when he's gone. We're going to miss him when he's gone for so many different reasons. And I am thoroughly, because I've got no skin in the game, I don't have to be in the locker room with him. I don't have to face him and say, hey, LeBron, we didn't actually get a trade done or whatever. I thoroughly enjoy when LeBron's on the passive-aggressive kick. It makes me laugh. I love
20,
it.
20 years in, you still love the soap opera.
I mean, because I had to be on the front line of the soap opera and deal with so much of it, that now I can just be like, you know, yeah. I know I've been there and done all that. You know, I don't have to be like McMenamin and like sigh and then trudge back to my computer and fire off a news story within 11 minutes because the news desk is like, give us a story on the most recent LeBron thing. So I can just sit back and laugh and talk about it on TV and podcast. So yes.
It is entertaining. Yeah. It is entertaining.
And we've got, unfortunately, the Lakers don't play again until Thursday night.
You know, to speed up McMenamin on deadline, I got an idea. He should have an hourglass but like a maybe like a 15 minute glass instead of an hour glass. And then when it's time to write that news, or you should just start those sands filtering on through.
You should have said that off the air. I'm going to be at the game on Thursday. I could have brought in an hourglass. And
I mean, you still can. There's nothing stopping you. There's nothing stopping you.
Oh my God. It's going to be great. I'd get LeBron to sign it. What would that piece of merch be worth? Oh yeah. My God. All right. Thanks for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Jackson for staying up late yet again. Thank you to McMahon and Bontemps. Thank you for your support of the Hoop Collective, which is now seen on ESPN2 on Tuesdays. I'm sure all of you watched it today. So thank you again, and we will talk to you Thursday. Actually, we'll record Thursday. I'll post on Friday after the trade deadline.
Adios, amigos. Looking forward to it.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.